It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. A federal appeals court is giving Texas more latitude to enforce a ban on so-called sanctuary cities. Today's decision by the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals comes nearly a month after a judge blocked most of the law. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says the decision allows the state to enforce the core of the law, but opponents suing over the immigration crackdown say the decision won't drastically change the status quo. Senate Bill 4 requires Texas cities and counties to comply with requests from federal immigration officials to detain people suspected of being in the country illegally and jailed on non-immigration offenses. The state had asked the Fifth Circuit to let the law take effect while the case is being appealed. Oral arguments are set for November. The city of Dallas is revamping its cultural plan, and it wants to hear from residents about their interest in the arts. That effort starts tonight with a series of community meetings. The first is underway at the Dallas Museum of Art. It's happening until 8 o'clock. Another meeting is tomorrow night at 6 at the Dallas Children's Theater. Jennifer Scripps runs the city's Office of Cultural Affairs.
Well, we really want to engage all of the people who live, work, and play in Dallas and hear from them how they experience the arts, either as artists themselves or as audiences, as parents, as seniors. How do they value the arts, participate? What do they want more of? What's not really connecting with them? And then also where?
Other meetings are scheduled Thursday night at Walnut Hill Recreation Center and Saturday morning at Redbird Mall. Learn more at artandseek.org. And now to Think, an education in China. Teenagers in Shanghai outscore students from around the world in math, science, and reading. Journalist Lenora Chu set out to understand the secret behind Shanghai's superachievers when she sent her three-year-old son to one of the city's most coveted schools. Today on Think, she talked with Chris Boyd about the cultural differences that shape China's education system.
So there isn't the word self-esteem in the Chinese lexicon that there is in the U.S. Here, myself included as an American parent, I'm constantly worried about how my son feels about himself, about his confidence. What I've noticed in Chinese children, though, if a teacher tells them you're not doing well or they get a 70 on a math test, there's an effort in the entire family to sort of get that kid up to speed rather than saying, oh, don't worry about it. It's okay. You worked hard. It really is that belief in the strength of the child and the belief that every child can learn with enough effort. And I think that's one of the big takeaways.
Lenora Chu is the author of Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and The Global Race to Achieve. She'll be at the Helan Shopping Center, Barnes & Noble in Fort Worth on Friday. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 9, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. A North Texas lab is considered a leader in DNA testing to identify human remains and missing people. Over the summer, the University of North Texas Center for Human Identification was once again in the national spotlight when it identified another victim of serial killer John Wayne Gacy. Dixie Peters leads the missing persons unit at the center. She talked with KERA's Justin Martin.
Dixie Peters, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What kinds of cases does your lab take on? I'm assuming you can't take every missing persons case.
Skeletal remains are discovered in a variety of different situations, and they have no idea who they are. So investigators will call on us to try to get a DNA profile from that, put that into a database, and hopefully match that up with relatives who are missing their loved ones, where we previously have processed their samples. We will also accept some cases that perhaps they just need a confirmation of a DNA identity.
What is the most extreme case that you can think of where the DNA that you had was the hardest to extract?
Cases that are about 80 to 100 years old are the hardest ones, yes.
I'm going to follow that up with what's the oldest case you've dealt with?
I think from the 1930s, because they weren't exactly sure, of course, when the remains had been buried, but they were buried in soil, and so they unearthed all these graves, and there was very little remains. There were some teeth that weren't even intact anymore. The bones were very brittle. They would just fall apart in your hands.
Your lab made the news in July when it identified another victim of serial killer John Wayne Gacy. How did your lab get involved with such an old case?
The Cook County Sheriff's Office outside of Chicago, Illinois, they had contacted us in 2011 and wanted to see if we would be willing to try to process these bones. They had 8 sets of remains that had not been identified back in the late 70s, early 80s. We were able to get DNA profiles from these skeletal remains. Once they knew that we had the DNA profiles, then they made a public announcement for families to come forward that had missing brothers that matched matched the victim profile of a John Wayne Gacy victim.
What's the most difficult thing about your job?
For agencies and for the families who are waiting, I can't imagine what the pain is of waiting, but it does take time. And unfortunately, it's not like what we see on TV where we can turn around a DNA profile really quickly. That's the challenge. It's just trying to not only maintain a high level of quality in the work that we do, but also try to do it as quickly as we possibly can, but knowing that it may take us several attempts in order to be able to get a good profile.
What's the most difficult case you've dealt with?
Wow, there's so many. We had one that was it was called the Dozier School for Boys out in Florida. That was one where the school was being accused of misconduct, I think abusing boys and actually potentially even murdering them and burying them there on the school property. And the school had closed several years ago. They were able to have an anthropologist go through and dig up each of these graves. And then we were trying to obviously get a DNA profile from these samples. These were boys that had died in, say, the 1930s. They obviously didn't have any children. Finding family members that were still alive that would be available for testing for comparison, that was challenge number one. And then challenge number two was being able to get good DNA from these skeletal remains that were so old.
Has there ever been a case that made you feel good?
Some of the ones that stand out the most recently was, and it was actually a result of some of these Gacy cases, because so many family members started coming forward thinking that maybe their loved one was a Gacy victim, we actually ended up helping solve some other cases that would have never been solved had these family members not come forward. For example, there was a young man who was identified that we had received the remains from Utah a couple years prior to receiving the family reference samples as a result of this Gacy investigation. When we found this association in our database, that was just really rewarding because had that Gacy case investigation not been reopened, I don't know if the family members would have known to even come forward to be able to provide their DNA. And also, I mean, with unidentified remains, you never know when you're going to get a hit or an association is what we prefer to call them. We may have unidentified remains that we processed years ago, and we can have all the DNA profiles that we want from all the skeletal remains. But until family members come forward and go to law enforcement and have their DNA collected, a lot of these associations are going to go missed. That's really what I would say to the listeners, that if they have a family member who is missing, contact law enforcement, get a missing persons report going. Ask them to collect your sample and get it sent in.
Dixie Peters leads the Missing Persons Lab at the Center for Human Identification at the University of North Texas. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And a follow-up to that interview, you may have heard the Center for Human Identification wasn't able to accept as many cases due to federal funding cuts. UNT officials say the center has resumed DNA and anthropological services for all U.S. law enforcement agencies. That's thanks to support from the National Institute of Justice. Coming up tomorrow morning, a few dads began meeting a few years ago in Cedar Hill on a mission to help kids in schools across the city. The group has grown to more than 1,000 dads serving all Cedar Hill schools. One of their goals, act as strong male role models. Learn more about All Pro Dads. That's tomorrow morning at 8:22 during Morning Edition. And in the weather, mostly cloudy tonight across North Texas with lows in the mid-70s. Expect cooler temperatures this week as thunderstorms begin rolling through the region tomorrow. It's 91 degrees in Dallas, 90 in Fort Worth. It's 6:30. I'm Stephanie Kuo, KERA News.